Accession number 27074, reel 14.
Squadron leader Bam Bamberger, reel 14.
I keenly wanted to go back on operational flying, and but the time I was with the Central Gunner School, which were mainly training air gunners to coordinate fire for daylight bombing raids. And it was especially interesting, people were especially interested at the time because of the Americans starting their daylight fortress raids and having heavy casualties. And my main job was doing attacks on exercises against bombers to allow them to formulate the best means of coordinating gunfire. Based at the same airfield, Sailor Man had just started the fighter gunnery training wing to train fighter pilots as gunnery instructors. The CO of my unit said he'd do his best to get me back onto operational flying, and he used the process of transferring me as a pupil to Sailor Malan's fighter gunnery wing. I'll mention the names. His team included Wimpy Wade, who went on to be a test pilot, very famous, unfortunately he was killed, and Alan Wright, who is still around and kicking, just. Sailor Malan, I'd admired him, though I'd never met him previously, I'd admired him from the distance because I knew he'd flown during the Battle of Britain, having a young family, and yet he came out of it as probably the top ace, and he also came out with some basic theories or guidelines on how to shoot. And this had never virtually been highlighted before. He brought out a whole set of rules. I cannot remember them now, but I always remember, or I can recollect, the first one was get in as close as possible, and beware of the Hun in the sun, and such terminology as that. But he was such a straightforward talker. He inspired you from the word go. Even at the time, obviously, I wasn't flying operations. He raised my enthusiasm to getting back, having another go at the Germans. And so I was on number 3 fighter gunnery pilot course, being lectured and taught and guided by Sailor Malan and his team. And up to this day, I still look upon him as the best fighter pilot produced by the RAF during the war.
Was his methods initially seen as ruthless, do you think?
Sailor Malan's advice, instructions, was really just basic common sense. But that, in the pre-war years, had more or less been forgotten in pre-war. It was flying discipline and doing everything according to the book, whereas Sailor Malan ideas were facing up to the situation as it was.
So what happened next in your progress to return to operational flying?
After qualifying as a gunnery instructor, I may have mentioned this previously, they wanted a pound of flesh out of me, and that's when I mentioned I went over to Northern Ireland to help train the Americans and other British squadrons over there. But eventually I was posted back to Fighter Command, but the squadron I was sent to was just being pulled out of the front line, so I requested another overseas posting. And I found myself in North Africa, joining 93 Squadron. I think at that time we were flying Spitfire 5s. But it was coming to the end of the North African campaign. The Germans were definitely being pushed back, and they were coming to the end of their stay in Africa, because Rommel would also have been pushed back in the desert. And so I was only in the North Africa campaign at the tail end. There were some skirmishes in the air, but I think at that point the Luftwaffe had lost heart. They lost any form of what I call air supremacy that they'd had in earlier on in the North African campaign. And so, really, I was keen to get on with the war, and the squadron then, North Africa, Jones pulled out of North Africa, or in the process of pulling out, and we went on to Malta to start flying over Sicily to clear the air of the Germans for the invasion of Sicily, for the eventual invasion of Sicily.
The skirmishes that you'd had, what type of aircraft had you really been skirmishing with?
The only German aircraft I came across in North Africa were once again 109s. I didn't see one bomber of any shape or size. We did a little bit of ground strafing, but at that point in the war, and even later on, the Spitfire wasn't looked upon as being the ideal platform for shooting at ground targets. And in particular, the Spitfire was somewhat vulnerable if hit by, well, any type of fire. It wouldn't take the punishment of many other aircraft.
When you were doing these ground attacks, is there any kind of rules about attacking a ground target that differ from air combat?
Ground attack work, to me, didn't give me, it didn't make the adrenaline flow. It was rather a boring, dull and uninteresting sort of activity. Occasionally you were shaken out of your relaxed state of mind, because you may suddenly come up against a well-defended target, and then all the tracer whistling through the air makes you wish you hadn't started the attack in the first place.
I mean, I was thinking along the lines of the rules, would you just make one pass, or would you make multiple passes or something of that order on a target?
If the return ground fire was not too intensive, and you thought your first attack had only been been unsuccessful or only partially successful, you would come around again. But remember, we were always virtually flying in a squadron of 12, and so whatever target you'd selected, probably by the time 12 aircraft had to get at it, it wasn't worth having a second effort.
And in attacking, would it literally be one aircraft at a time attacking in line?
It was normally that way, but it just depended what you came across. You may come across, say, three tanks, and then they would be scattered. So then someone would say, B flight, take the target on the left or on the port side, or I'll take the one near that bunch of trees or something like that. But though ground strafing played a big part in the D-Day later in the war, at this time, ground targets were not a high priority.
And how did it feel for, because your other operations, you didn't always have air superiority. Mm. Was there a different feeling for yourself, obviously operating with air superiority?
I've always virtually, my war, I split into two, the Battle of Britain period and the Malta period. From North Africa onwards, I always looked upon it as the easy war. Now, it was easier because in most instances we had air superiority. But I think also my attitude grew out of experience, because even though I looked upon it as easy, people were still being shot down from time to time. We were still having some losses or aircraft damaged. And it was brought home to me on one occasion when one pilot came in to my tent to ask to be relieved from flying duties because he was so terrified. And he seemed astounded to be told that most pilots were somewhat scared and you had to sort of get used to it. But again, that made me think that I'd probably got overconfident by that time.
Was all the confidence a problem sometimes with pilots?
Well, that's a tricky one to answer. I would say possibly more the other way about. Lack of confidence was a greater problem than overconfidence.
With 93 Squadron, who was commanding it when you were posted to it?
Wilf Sizer was the CO. He'd taken part in the Battle of Britain and been shot down, and he was quite experienced. The group captain was someone called Sheep Gilroy, again a Battle of Britain pilot. And he was remarkable, calm, tranquil. He was, again, one of these people who never had the publicity they should have, because he was a high-scoring pilot, but very modest with it.
Are there any other members of the squadron who you remember, who you operated with at that time?
At this point in time, I cannot bring forward any names. If you asked me, I'd say yes.
So after North Africa, you moved on to Malta. I imagine the situation had changed since when you'd left Malta.
My return to Halfar Airfield, which we landed at and were based there, was quite a almost a sentimental moment, because when I had left Malta in 1941, I swore I'd never come back there. But because in 1941 we were losing, and then I was returning in what I call very much a winning mode.
And at the time, what was the air activity like over Malta, and what was the
our operational role when we first arrived was flying over to Malta, trying to that obviously was a bit of a range problem, you know, because we couldn't stay over Sicily too long, was to get any German aircraft around to come up. And they didn't seem to be very aggressive or want to, and they'd move north round Mount Etna to Catania airfield and that area. So they weren't near the coast at the airfields they'd used for attacking Malta in 1941. So there was not, we swept over a particular height looking for targets of opportunity, but we weren't ground strafing at all. That didn't come into our brief. But we didn't come across much at all. So in fact, it was rather dull. The only interesting part at the time, which is possibly worth mentioning, was single-engine aircraft pilots, fighter pilots in particular, hated flying more over water. And there was a long stretch of water, or it seemed long, between Malta and Sicily. And we had a number of pilots returning, talking, saying they had engine problems. Well, at the time, it was put to... originally put down to, they didn't like flying over the water, because every time you left land and went over the water, the note of your engine seemed to change. but in the end, it turned out there was a major flaw in the engines of the aircraft we had, because when they'd removed the first, the plugs from the two front cylinders of the engines, they were, the points were completely leaded over, a solid lead. And so I remember Rolls-Royce people were flown out to Malta to see if they could sort out what the problem was. I don't know what it was. Whether it was fuel, whether it was something to do with the... I've no idea. But obviously it was resolved because we carried on. And, of course, the next stage was when the invasion took place, and we flew cover to all these invasion vessels landing... on the beaches of Sicily, and it was an interesting sight seeing all these massive boats and landing craft. But again, the Germans' air force didn't seem to be interfering very much.
I take it there was no sight from the Italians either at that point.
Oh, no. I don't recollect the Italians at all. No recollection of them. There may have been one or two around, but they didn't come in the direction of our particular wing, which was 324 wing.
How How much time would you get over Sicily, really? Because, I mean, you talked about your duration of your patrols earlier in Malta, which were very short when you were there in 1941.
Yeah.
How much time would you get over Sicily?
Switch. I cannot recollect how our fuel allowed us how much time we could spend over Sicily. But at that time, we were certainly not flying with long-range tanks, which were introduced somewhat a few months later. Possibly to give you an example, this is after the invasion had taken place, and we were flying up near Mount Etna, more to the north of Sicily, and we came across some Ju-87s. I'll go into this in a little more detail. In this, obviously the Ju-87s split up all over the place, and you know, when you're attacking from above, you know, aircraft with camouflage, you know, you lose them. And when I picked up the Ju-87 and followed him down, and unfortunately for him, but fortunate for me, I shot him down. The rear gunner bailed out, and his parachute got caught up in the tail, and the aircraft went on diving into the ground. And that was the first time in the war that it was brought home to me that I was actually shooting at people. Up to that, I'd only ever shot at aircraft. I never shot at people. But getting back to the fuel, by that stage, I hadn't got enough fuel to get back to Malta. But we knew that what I think they call them air commandos, the ground crew, would have fixed up a particular airfield, something I think called Pacino or something like that, near the southern coast of Sicily. And I know I landed there very short of fuel. So, getting back to your original question, obviously we couldn't stay over there very long.
Would you have been briefed about the location of the... would that be an emergency landing strip?
Yes, that would have been... as we were operating further, deeper into Sicily, that would have... We would have been informed that these air commandos would have moved in. Because they not only... prepare the airstrip was probably there, but they not only clear up the airstrip of debris, but they bring fuel in, which was the vital thing. So we had to then refuel on the airstrip purely from cans, which takes some time, and then we flew back to Malta.
You said when you attacked the Ju-87. That obviously you'd realise that there was somebody on board that aircraft.
Yeah.
Your earlier fighting against the Messerschmitts must have been a different form, because you've described that very well earlier in the tape. But with a Ju-87, I imagine that's a completely different method of attacking an aircraft like that.
The Ju-87 is an easy aircraft to attack. You may be a little unlucky, or a little put off, because the rear gunner would fire back at you. No one likes being shot at, not even by the rear gunner of a Ju-87. But apart from that, provided you were not going too fast, the Ju-87 was a sitting duck. Whereas, going back to most of my other air combat against Ju-87s, against Me-109s, you were just snap shooting at an aircraft and to me, it may not have been to other people, to me, they were just aircraft, and that there was a pilot sitting in who had a mother and dad never entered my head.
With the JU-87s, how much of a threat would the rear gunner be?
To me, at that time, and I'm talking now about 1943, I don't think I considered it any threat at all. Just a bit of a possible inconvenience.
Which way would you attack? Would there be a different way of attacking it, or would you attack from behind?
It depended on the situation you found yourself in at the time, whether they were going towards you at a lower level or diving to attack something, and this one was obviously diving just to get away, and so I went after him in the same. And they dive quite steeply when they have their flaps out and they're going down. Though to the person on the ground, they're coming down very fast. Compared with the Spitfire, they're coming down quite slowly. So one of the problems was, one was to stay behind them. they were very easy targets.
Would there be a problem with probably travelling too fast and possibly overshooting before you could?
I mean, that was almost one of the first considerations, was overshooting. That applied to virtually attacking any German bomber, overshooting. Because if you had speed up, it gave you confidence. And throttling back and slowing down in a war situation is not something you like doing.
Because always I was thinking back to something you said about Sailor Milan, about getting in close.
Yeah, that's right.
That
yeah.
must be quite difficult.
It is.
Trying to judge the speeds.
Getting in close and yet maintaining what I call some sort of combat speed is not an easy task, certainly not attacking a bomber.
You seem to say there as well that it's almost like it takes a little bit of your confidence away in the fact that you are slowing down to attack.
I think any fighter pilot would always say they like speed, because without speed you can't get anywhere, you can't achieve anything, you see. But then when you reach your target, you don't want too much speed, otherwise you don't have time to look at your sight and fire your guns in as you should do.
So this period over, well, operating from Malta to Sicily, you were just doing operational patrols, were you, at that period, looking for opportunist targets?
Yes, most of our, occasionally there were escorts to I can't remember what aircraft we were escorting, but I know what they were. Just remember, they were the aircraft that had come. They were aircraft that came from the desert aircraft.
Were they Bostons?
No, single engine fighter aircraft with.
Kitty Hawks.
They were Kitty Hawks, that's right. That's what I was trying to think of. See, senility set in. They carried bombs. And they were bombing the Germans trying to cross the strait between Sicily and the Italian mainland. So we did some escort duty for them. But there was no interference at all. So the war over Sicily was comparatively a peaceful affair, viewed from just my point of view.